This is Due By Friday, the weekly challenge podcast with Alex Cox, Merlin Mann, and me, Max Temkin. This week's challenge, rearrange your iPhone home screen according to some rules that Alex made up.
Oh boy.
I had a feeling this is how it was going to be. Oh, God.
Don't kink shame him.
I'm going to trim my nose hair. I got an ear hair that's really. Oh yeah. Oh, there it is.
Can I ask you a ear and nose hair question?
Yes. You.
I know you're. You consider yourself an ENTH, an ear, nose, and throat hair professional.
Oh yeah, I consider myself more of an INTJ. That means I'm a millennium with a phone.
I think I'm an infinite jest.
Oh, we got to talk about him. I watched so many David Foster Wallace videos last night. Mm. Anyway, continue. Yes, I consider myself very much an ear, nose, and throat man.
Now, okay, now I'm not...
I'm a throat man.
Now, Merlin, as you know, I'm about to turn 30, so I'm becoming quite an old man. And I'm starting to get some long wizard hairs in my nose and in my ears. And let me tell you, what I do is I sort of save them until they get just long enough for me to get at, and then I pluck them out.
You're using your finger with your nails?
You just get in there and you just pluck them right out. They come right
pluck
out.
Pluck them right out.
It's a harvest.
Oh, I agree. And then the nice thing to do is when you get some good wizard hair, is you kind of line them up in front of you. And you can really get a sense of how it's going. You can see how wiggly they are, how gray they are, how wizardly they are. And it makes you cry a little bit, which is nice.
Your tear ducts activate. And I'll probably get in one a month. One good hair a month. Maybe a little less frequently than that.
You have like a nose hair period?
Yeah. All the cards partners were all linked. Our cycles are all linked.
You call each other. I got my hair.
I can't swim or ride horses, and I need to lay down.
The period cycles linking, the Wellesley effect. David Pinzoff is one of the cards partners. Is getting his PhD in psychology, and he studies like evo psych, and he was showing us all this new research that shows that that's probably not real.
Turns out
it's basically confirmation bias.
I bet it's the birthday problem. You know, it's one of those it's not that much of a coincidence. There's only 30-ish days in a month.
Exactly. And then it's a confirmation bias. So you sort of notice when it happens and you don't notice when it doesn't happen.
How's that different from an availability heuristic, Max?
Well, the availability heuristic is if you just looked at you and your friends, just the data that was available. So it is that a little bit too, because the sample size and how big is the sample of these period cycle syncing studies?
Certainly very small. You know what? I'm going to add a topic. We have to do something about Daniel Kahneman at some point. Wouldn't that be an interesting show to do?
Absolutely. Now, who is that? Is that a naked economist?
All of the words that you're using were invented by him and his partner in the 1970s.
I thought Malcolm Gladwell made those words.
Oh, turns out, so Daniel Kahneman, he's kind of, this is not the show. He's come into... how can I say this? Okay, so a lot of the stuff that turns out people cream their genes over has some basis in the massive amount of work that Kahneman and his partner, whose name escapes me right now, did. A lot of the bias stuff. So basically his whole deal is what has come to be called behavioral economics, which is the biggest turns out of all the turns outs. But he's he's a sciencey guy. And, the thing, will the kid wait to get the marshmallow? That all has a basis in the work that they did many years ago. So right now he's coming. So a couple years, 3 years ago or so, he put out a book called Thinking Fast and Slow that I never finished reading.
Oh, that's the really pencil book that I still haven't read.
Yeah, basically, the nut in a nut, there's these two different modes of thinking that are really quite different and explain a fair amount about
Merlin, you know, according to the Malcolm Gladwell book I read, you shouldn't actually spend too long on this kind of stuff. What you really want to do is sort of take it in quickly and make like a gut decision. You want to make a flash decision. So could you just sort of summarize it from the back flap and I'll decide whether I agree with it or not?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. There's two kinds of expertise. The kind that takes 10,000 hours and looking at a statue for a second. And
that sounds pretty good to me. I don't know.
Michael Lewis, the Moneyball guy and the Big Short guy, has now written a book basically about these two guys and their relationship. So I think Daniel Kahneman would be an interesting topic to talk about. This is not the show.
Well, as you know, I read about this in the number one national best-selling Malcolm Gladwell book, Dipshit, Why Stupid People Are Actually Smart.
I read a short discussion of that in The New Yorker, so I didn't have to read the whole Dipshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was also released as a podcast.
Hey guys, please remember to like and subscribe.
let's start the show here.
Oh god, we have so much to talk about. Wait, no, I had another thing we were talking about. Oh yeah, anyway, with nose hairs. Incredible, tremendous, very successful. So what you want to do, what you might want to do is get yourself some really nice Japanese tweezers, which sounds like a euphemism.
I don't want to brag.
Okay.
But I do own the number one highest rated tweezers on the Wirecutter.
Oh, you got the Sweet Home tweezers.
The Sweet Home tweezers. Yeah. So
god damn it, Max. I'm trying to buy a motherfucking television and it is so.
Can I tell you, go on the dude, just go get the one on the Wirecutter, the biggest one that fits on your wall. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, we don't really have walls, but it's really.
And then
really
you hire
hard.
A big burly man, and he comes in, tick-a-da, and hoists it up on the wall.
Breaks your optical cable.
Well, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few optical cables. That's what they say. That's what Malcolm Gladwell says.
I should get a water.
Did you guys see that Trump paid some hookers to pee in the bed? That's fake news. That's probably fake news, but I know that it's probably fake news, but let me have it. I want like 48 hours.
Oh, there's so much I'm not saying. I was sitting there last night and like I almost tweeted it and I was like, no, don't let this be the hill you die on.
But, listen, I know that it's probably fake and it did not stop me from tweeting 500 piss jokes. I was born for this. Do you understand this?
I know, but you think you've hit rock bottom. You think you're done. You think it's not getting any weirder. And then you're thinking, like, the thought going through my mind at 10:30 last night, 10:30 Pacific, is, wow, you know, it's probably not true. But, like, regardless of whether or not it's true, the man who is going to be the next president of the United States, you fucking know that he was up all night reading every tweet that everybody had, everything that anyone had to say about the fact that he might have paid people to pee on each other. And that I just couldn't get that thought out of my mind, whether or not it's true, because you know he's obsessed with what people think of him.
The news, it started as a trickle, but by the time that Trump went to sleep, it was a full-blown stream of hot, frothy news. You know that? You know when you wake up and you have that first news in the morning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really brought our office together last night as we were waiting for the farewell speech. It was like a collective Twitter effort to like search to make sure that all of the puns had indeed been made, just in case. And then there was an exercise in self-control and not, you know, throwing up on our own keyboards. It was a good night.
I think a best practice for this. I don't always follow this, but I've always believed this. You get one joke. If it's a meme, you get one joke. Give me your best joke and then shut the fuck up. it's not a writer's room. Like, I want to hear your best joke, and then I don't want to hear another one. Now, I know that's not how Twitter works, but that's how I work on Twitter. On a good day, and I had one really good joke yesterday, and I walked away. I muted the... By the way, mute this conversation has got to be the greatest invention in the history of the internet. Because you can go, and you can go drop a tinkle on the internet, and then you say, mute this conversation. And then go let them argue about it. But that's my feeling. You don't want to go on and on about it. I mean, but it's still... It is kind of funny to... Have the Republican candidate do this all caps toot and then just see every single response is a really, really stupid pun about peeing. And it was there was something glorious, gloriously American about that. And knowing he had to fucking sit there and go like, I'm not going to read this. I'm not going to read this. And then go, oh, come on. That's not even funny. That's not even a joke.
It was. So I was at the speech last night, the Obama's farewell speech. Yes, it was very emotional, and
oh yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
A uniquely, I sincerely do not mean this as like a dig or anything, but it was like a uniquely poorly logistically orchestrated event. I have to imagine it was done with like a skeleton staff at the last second, and it was like it was kind of the event was a little sloppy for an Obama. Like Obama events are so polished and run with a military precision, and this one,
yeah,
was,
the echo was pretty distracting.
It was not the best event, but it was very fun. You know, sort of. Also a staff reunion, so everybody who's part of the Obama kind of universe flew in, so you know, get to see all the old friends from the campaign and people who, you know, you've met over the years, like working for this guy. And it was fun having everyone come together, and like Pissgate broke while we were all waiting in line to get into the speech, so that was fun. And then you get in there and the speech was in the main convention hall of McCormick Place, which I don't know if you've ever been to McCormick for a convention, but and it's pretty like, and there was nothing in there. Normally there's like a boat show or a food show or something going on in there, but there was nothing there. It was all empty except for this like tiny little, you know, in perspective, this tiny little stage that Obama was on. And it was almost like dizzying being in this building with all these people. I mean, it was enormous. And when you're all packed in there, like nobody has cell reception because then there's too much congestion and like your phone just can't connect. Plus, it's possible for security reasons they might actually be like jamming the cell signals during the event. But then everyone gets out of this like very poignant historic speech where the president was sort of the president urged the American people to like take politics seriously and be hopeful and like. Everyone walks out and your phone lights up and you have all your tweets and your text messages and it's just like wall-to-wall coverage of Trump, you know, the people pissing on Trump or whatever. Like, it was quite a contrast.
Yeah. Sandra Newman. They say Trump is such a great deal maker, but there are millions of women who would piss on him for free.
You know, that's the thing about the pissing is there are – what happened – I thought there was a lot of American prostitutes – who need jobs, Merlin, and this is just one more industry
that's another one. That's another one that's in the drafts folder. Bring these jobs home.
That's fake news. I mean, Trump said it, so it's down. Obviously we know the truth now because he said that it was fake news.
Okay, are we going to talk about this? We're going to talk about this. Let's talk about this.
About Pissgate?
Oh, hey, Alex, how's it going, man? Can I tell you about something I like?
Listen, I kind of broke myself because I was trying... People comment on my laugh a lot. I was trying so hard not to laugh. And goddamn...
That's the best part of the show. Don't be a dick.
The water.
Don't withhold. Please. God, Max, when can you be so withholding?
Please proceed, Governor.
I would like to use the balance of my time to the distinguished left from Cook County.
Now, Senator Mann, I'd like to congratulate your Alabama football team on their excellent performance this season.
I would like to thank the distinguished cocksmoker from Chicago for his sense of plurality. Please continue.
Now, Senator Mann, let me ask you this. Do you quarrel with your wife?
I've been tempted.
Let me remind you, Senator, you are under oath.
Well, no, you are. You're the one under oath. You're under oath.
Senator Mann, would you feel that it's fair to characterize your marriage only in terms of when you're quarreling with your wife?
Tell me, in single words, only the good things about your mother.
Wouldn't it similarly be unfair to characterize your record purely based on the many racist actions you have taken?
Well, that was a different time, and now people don't even listen to records anymore. They got their iPods.
It's the 10-year anniversary of the iPod, you guys.
I gotta go Google my iPod.
Alex, please. You there.
What?
Sorry, go ahead. You're trying not to laugh and pee. God.
I feel
you
like...
know, is this the detox? This is the detox, right? Are we talking about this? I got a feeling we're going to talk about this. It's either this or I figured Max was just going to tweet through the entire thing. He wasn't going to talk at all. Is he tweeting? Well, I'm going to go look.
I'm reading Twitter.
Okay. Now, okay, so let's assume. Okay, so here's the question. What part, if any, of these things do you think are likely to be true or likely to be corroborated? One of the many criticisms of these documents that came out is they don't have the traditional, first of all, like the vetting. Like, this is raw intel, right? And it sounds like it's kind of poorly copy-edited raw intel. Like, how much of this do you think is true, and how certain are they of which parts of this? What do you think is really happening here?
I also just want to say it's not intel. When you say it's not intel of any kind. This is like a report written by a guy. So intel would be intelligence.
It's more like reporting.
Exactly. It's like a summary of intel. I don't know. I mean, does anyone want to? I'm happy to prognosticate. I mean, listen, fucking. When I turn on CNN to watch Trump's rambling press conference this morning, like they had Rick Santorum was on talking about how he's an expert in cybersecurity. And so now just anyone can say whatever the fuck they want about anything. So I'm happy to prognosticate about this. But you just want sort of my gut instinct about this?
You spend a lot of mental and emotional energy on these things because they matter to you. And I think you think about it. And then, you know, it comes out in the steam of a show like this. You care a lot about this. And I want to ask you what you really think is going on, not just as a Obama-loving liberal flack, but as a rational person. What do you think is really going on, and what can be proven or will be proven? What do you think?
So here's where we are right now. I guess we need to get into this for the audience. So it's Wednesday morning, and what happened is BuzzFeed published this thing from possibly a British intelligence officer. We're not really sure, but it's some document, and it's got the pissing story, but also some very compromising information that shows that Trump's staff is talking to the Russians, and there's business dealings, and so on and so forth. To me,
there's the one big arc of it is, and this is, to me, this is the big kahuna that everyone's been wondering about, is like, well, you know, why is he, and maybe I'm changing the topic, but why is he so positive on Russia? And what this seems to say, whether or not it's true, accurate, complete, or anything like that, what it seems to say is there's a lot of evidence that however it was gotten, the Russians, in some form or fashion, have compromising information about Donald Trump that they are keeping on file for when they need it.
That is almost certainly true, but that's true of everyone. But I'll tell you this. I don't know. The pissing story, it's not true, but it's, although it is hilarious, but I don't know, maybe it's true. Who the fuck knows with Trump? Like, maybe it is, maybe it's not, but also it doesn't really matter because that's not really the thing at play here. What I can say I'm very confident about is that there is a relationship that sort of compromises the integrity of Trump's foreign policy decision making with Russia. It really doesn't. I mean, this report adds a lot of new damning detail to it. We'll see if any of those details are true or not. CNN's already corroborating, you know, independently with fucking Carl Bernstein on the byline. They're corroborating a lot of this. So there is something there to some of these details, but just to zoom out and look at the big picture, like, we've known about this for a long time. I mean, if you want to get a very good perspective on the Trump and his inner circle and their relationship with Russia, I recommend an episode of Slate's Trump Cast, the excellent Trump podcast with Jacob Weisberg. This one is from May 2nd, 2016, so it has nothing to do with any of this new intelligence. And it's just a story about Paul Manafort, who was at the time, it was Trump's campaign manager. And the title of the episode is Dictator's Favorite Sleazebag, Paul Manafort. And it talks about how Paul Manafort has been working for Putin and in elections in the Ukraine, and probably we know he has some debts to Russian oligarchs and possibly ties to organized crime. I mean, there's a lot of unsavory characters who are deeply sort of enmeshed in Russian economics and politics, who are in Trump's in Trump's inner circle. And we also know that during the RNC, one of the only changes that the Trump campaign forced through the party platform was that they weakened the Republican Party's stance on sanctions against Russia. So, like, we already know that there's this relationship of influence where somehow through his inner circle, through Trump directly or through the pissing video or whatever, somehow the Russians have a line of dialogue with Trump and Trump is accommodating them with deals and lifting sanctions and that kind of a thing. And I guess you can say, well, how bad is that? Does that disqualify you for being president? Personally, for me, I would prefer a president who purely represents the interests of the American people and they don't also have any sort of side dealings going on, but that's my own taste.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Chris Lettner works at Tesla now.
How crazy is that, man?
Yeah. No, my
friend... And he invented the iPod?
My very mm-hmm. first thought was, P is too normal. Like, if something... He's too normal.
And, you know, the whole, like, I'm a germaphobe thing. Well, yeah, exactly. That's what makes it dirty. Like, that's the thing. Like, do you think German people don't know poop is gross? No, it's the grossness that makes it fun.
Ugh. I made a joke on a podcast. It may have been this very podcast, as a matter of fact. And it was around the time when Pussygate came out and Trump, you know, had that tape where Trump was said he was assaulting women. And, I had sort of predicted there was this question at the week that was in the news cycle. There was this question of, is Trump going to have to withdraw from the ticket or not? Is Trump done, right? And people have asked this 100 times about Trump. And the answer is he's never done because he has no shame. I said at the time I made this joke and I was like, you know, honestly, Trump could go on CNN right now and say, yeah, I piss in women's mouths. That's my thing. I love to piss in women's mouths, and there's nothing they can do about it, and you're still going to elect me president. And it still wouldn't slow him down or stop him, because these kind of things are only damaging to people who have shame and people who care. And Trump has no shame. His voters don't care. You know, for a while on Twitter, among the, like, Republican friends that I have and people I follow, there was this strong, like, hashtag never Trump movement, where there were all these Republicans who were anti-Trump. And I'll tell you, I like a lot of these people. I respect them professionally, and I really respected them for coming out against Trump when he was the nominee. But as soon as Trump won, they flipped, and they were so happy, and they were dancing on Obama's grave, and they were like, we're going to get Obamacare now. So it turns out what people didn't like about Trump was that they felt that he was a loser and that he couldn't win. And as soon as he won, they had no reason not to like him anymore. So all of this, like, unprincipled – or excuse me, all of this, like – all this, like, principled politics of the left where we're like, this guy has no dignity and he's a joke and there's all these scandals. Like, we care about that. The American people mm-hmm. don't care about that. Not with Trump, anyway. Maybe if there was a politician with dignity like Mitt Romney, it would sort of stick. If Mitt Romney paid women to piss on him, that would probably stick because he's a man with dignity. But Trump has no dignity.
You're going to cut all this out, right?
No, this is gold.
Okay.
This is a gold shower of information.
This is the thing that I have not said except to my wife, because the whole idea of this makes me so uncomfortable. And saying it anywhere to anybody that is not a very close person to me invokes Godwin's law in a way that I'm not comfortable with. But to something you said this morning, you kind of said the thing that has been on my mind for months and months and months, which is, first of all, yes, I agree with you that not simply the people who support him, but the people who are in a position of power, they have a lot to lose if, I mean, they have little to gain by going against Trump and a lot to lose by, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be supported by a lot of these folks unless something really different from what's happened before happens. But here's the problem. No matter how wackadoodle his ideas are, no matter how crazy his schemes, no matter how impractical anything that he wants. This is the problem with entering in to an authoritarian world, is that no matter what happens, he will never fail. It's always going to be the fault of the Jews. It's going to be the fault of the immigrants. And it's going to be the fault of all those perfidious liberals who just can't accept that they lost. So every time, you know, when we get bombed, it's not going to be his fault. It's going to be the fault of, I mean, I don't want to just say the Jews, but, like, that I'm saying that for a reason. it's going to be all of these people that all of his supporters already are at least extremely suspicious of. It's going to be their fault. If the wall, it's not a fence. If the wall does not get built in the way that he wants and paid for in the way that he wants, it's not because it was a terrible idea to begin with. It's because of all those bad people. And that's the thing that for months has been dogging me. It's like, no matter what, it's never going to turn out that it was his fault. It's always somebody else's fault. And that's how an authoritarian regime works. And that's the part that really scares me. If we win, back in the days, we got to get the faithless electors. No matter what happens, he's going to win, because that's how this works. And that's what scares the shit out of me.
Listen, I'm in a pretty low place in terms of my own sort of feelings about politics and stuff. So I don't, had a lot of people ask me like, what do we do or whatever? And it's not clear to me yet. I don't know. I myself have just been like reading a lot because I feel like at least it's something I can do. And probably like weirdly, the best thing that I read that helps me get some insight into it, it just helps me get my head around what's happening in a way where at least it's a framework where things make sense again, is this book that Sartre wrote in 1945 called The Anti-Semite and the Jew. And it's sort of this study of the German anti-Semites in Germany and Jews in Germany and their place and their sort of codependent relationship, because the anti-Semites, they hate the Jew and they want to exterminate the Jews, but they created the Jew. They need the Jew. The Jew is their center of power, in the same way that for now Trump's Jew would be like, I don't know, Hillary Clinton or the dishonest media or something. There's this great quote. Sartre says, I mentioned a while back some remarks by anti-Semites, all of them absurd. I hate Jews because they make servants insubordinate, because a Jewish furrier robbed me, etc. Never believe that anti-Semites are completely unaware of the absurdity of their replies. They know that their remarks are frivolous, open to challenge, but they're amusing themselves, for it is their adversary who is obliged to use words responsibly, since he believes in words. The anti-Semites have the right to play. They even like to play with the discourse by giving ridiculous reasons. They discredit the seriousness of their interlocutors. They delight in acting in bad faith, since they seek not to persuade by sound argument, but to intimidate and disconcert. If you press them too closely, they will abruptly fall silent, loftily indicating by some phrase that the time for argument is past. And that this helped me understand the power politics of what's happening on the right. And again, not to say that they're I'm not literally saying that they're anti-Semitic or Nazis. It's a way of saying what I'm trying to say here is we're the side that cares about words and the meaning of words, and saying, we've got you. You've by your own logic, you've contradicted yourself. That's right. When we sort of we Jewishly reply this, these logical counter arguments and rebuttals to Trump. We're like
you're having tea and talking about the Talmud.
Exactly. It's like it's not. They know that this is the game. They know that what the game is, right? They're toying.
And it's like there's somebody, I got to find this article this woman wrote a few years ago about Twitter that was so influential in my thinking about what's broken about Twitter. And one of the things about her, what she was saying was basically, I'm probably going to mangle this, but it was along the lines of like, when you argue with somebody on the internet, whoever cares more will lose. In a lot of ways, it's the person who doesn't care or the person who doesn't have a stake in that particular argument that will always win. They don't have skin in the game. And that's why trolls win. And like what you're saying here, that provocation, that provocative language is it's very casual. And then you come in, you seem like somebody with a stick up their ass. You seem like, Eddie Albert on Green Acres when you come in and you're the one who wants to like talk about logic.
Right. But we're the ones who care about politics with dignity. We're the ones who care about internal consistency and specific language and saying what you mean. And when Trump comes in and sounds like a buffoon, and he's giving, like the Sartre thing said, but when he gives ridiculous reasons and uses unspecific language and makes a fool of himself and everyone around him, what he's doing is he's discrediting the seriousness of politics, of the dialogue. And this is not it's not actually a bad thing for Trump. What Trump's audience loves is that they feel that the whole system is false and corrupt, and they love that Trump comes in and destroys it. And so when the more that we get into these you've made a post hoc ergo propter hoc error, Mr. Trump. Like, when will you be resigning? It's like, that's, we're actually playing right into their game. Like, that is anticipated. But now, that being said, one of the reasons I'm, and it helps me to understand that, but one of the reason, one of the things I'm a little bit at a loss for is, absent making good faith arguments and trying to persuade people and having a conversation and using words that mean things, I don't actually know what to do.
Yeah. You feel like somebody walking out of the ghetto in Warsaw saying, hey, why are you taking my bag? You said I could keep a bag. And they're like, yeah, okay, we said that, but like, believe me, it's going to get worse. Okay, you guys ready to start the show?
How's your app icons?
Hang on. Point of order. Follow up. God damn it, Max.
Oh, Max, do you see the Google Doc?
We have a doc?
Merlin, you seem concerned about mentioning your sleep herbs. People know you're not a doctor. We can talk about
Alex
your sleep
and
herbs.
I take a little sleep herb as well.
Yes, that way you can really, really look at your hand. Okay, we can talk about that. Here's the thing.
Just tell people what it is.
Alex, I put that in brackets, in 10-point type, in gray.
I know. Here's, there's something that,
That's not going to make sense because Alex is cutting out the last half hour before this. It's not going in the show.
We'll see.
Nothing matters anymore, Merlin.
Yeah.
I used to be concerned about saying crazy things on politics and in podcasts. And let me tell you, nothing fucking matters anymore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. It's all going in. None of it matters.
Then by your logic, no one should have a suitcase. La 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 via.
Actually, technically, that is a classic no true Scotsman argument, and I have thus defeated you. You have been disarmed,
okay,
my good sir.
Line to the right. So, my question is, I don't like giving advice that gets too near to health things, and I don't want to accidentally have somebody go, oh, you know, formerly famous podcaster Merlin Mann says I should go eat this pill, and then they fucking die and shit. Like, I can't have that on me. I will tell people, because people seem to want to know, and maybe we can just close the thread. This is not mysterious. You can go.
Bro, let me tell
shit.
You something. I'm a real man. You gotta have a lot of powders. You gotta take a lot of risks. You gotta push your body to the limits.
Sleep is weakness. You need to get in there and do your own research.
Your body, it's one big experiment, and I'm the scientist. Now, let's get in there with some powders.
Your body's a boiler, and I'm the fire.
Let's raise that testosterone and take our sleep herbs. Let's be well rested so that we can express our true masculine identity.
I'm sort of confused because if Trump was peeing on the women, that's more of an alpha male move.
I don't think he was peeing on them. I think you got to remember his relationship with his father. You're going to cut all this out. In order to understand the peeing, it's helpful to understand the relationship with his father. He never got the approval of his father.
Are we doing a bit? Is this real or is this a bit?
No, this is being cut out. What, you don't watch Frontline?
Let me clarify one thing about the peeing that maybe I think has gotten lost in a lot of the very good Twitter dialogue about the piss Twitter. But here's the thing is that, so the deal was Trump stayed in a fancy hotel, allegedly. Trump stayed in a fancy hotel, and he got put in the same room that President Obama had stayed in.
He knew there's a bed in this room that the president and the first lady had slept in.
The first black president who Trump has spent his entire political career slandering and discrediting.
So he thinks, you know what? I'll get some pay-per-view and get a fucking Toblerone and just lay down and enjoy sleeping in the bed that the president had been in. And that's how the story ended.
Well, and also, yeah, well, no, he had to defile the bed. And let me tell you, I've defiled some hotel beds. I mean, I've eaten a sandwich in there. I've eaten a meatball sub in a hotel bed. I've slept in hungover until noon. No hotel bed escapes me unscathed. But this is what Trump did. He really defiled it.
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm. So it's not. That's the thing is where I'm confused here is if he pissed on these women, I could see that being like the Trump base being like, oh, that's cool. He's like a cool alpha male like I want to be. That's like,
yeah, he's not one of those peacocks.
They call that the gorilla mindset.
Oh, is that right?
Are you familiar with that? That's where when you go into a business meeting, you have to urinate on your opponents on their largest son to establish dominance.
Oh, okay. You know what? I have heard of that. I remember that from IntroPsych. Yeah,
they call that the gorilla mindset.
The gorilla mindset. You come in and you pee on the oldest son.
Exactly.
Mazel tov.
But here's the thing: is Trump just paid some women to pee on each other and he watched, and that's kind of a cuck move to me.
Yeah, totally cuck. Yeah.
So I don't know how this fits into the cuck alpha spectrum.
And then at 10:40 last night, I found myself sitting there thinking, you know, and all of this, you know what he's thinking? I wonder if there's a video. I wonder if I can get it. And I wonder how I look in it. You know, that's got to be going through his mind. If there is a video and you know he's in it, you know, working Little Don with those tiny hands. I mean, you know, you think about that. I mean, you know, he's just wondering if he looks good in that video. Do you think he's wearing like a smock? Do you think he's got like a towel? Because
he's a germaphobe.
What's that?
He's germaphobic. I mean, he didn't sleep in that bed afterwards.
No. See, I think that room, I think he had two rooms probably, allegedly. I bet he had the one for sleeping and the one for watching the ladies pee. Allegedly.
Oh, I see. Because when you're that rich, Trump is a very wealthy man.
Oh, you get a suite of rooms. You get rooms and rooms. He might have wanted a room on a different floor when he's done.
Oh, okay.
Man. You got to really think this through.
Got to really look at the original research.
So it's called Source Naturals Night Rest with Melatonin. And we can put a link to it in notes. Did you guys ever try this?
Yeah, you could go right now to MerlinManHerbs.com and use the offer code PISSGATEHAMILTON. You believe me, buddy. You're not going to be throwing away your shot.
So, did you end up trying it? I think Alex didn't, probably.
Trying what?
Oh, so you guys never... Okay, so I had suggested you guys could try these if you wanted to. I'm just curious if you had...
I don't know where to buy these herbs. I don't think it's even legalized in Chicago.
Oh, my God. People ask.
Can you just get it online?
We'll put it in show notes. Please, you know, drink responsibly. Like, I don't want you to die.
Can I tell you, if you take some powder that you hear about on a podcast, you're the dumbest person alive. You deserve to die. So take it. Hey, listen, if you're going to take this advice at face value and just take some powders that Merlin says to take, that's natural selection doing its job. Please take them. I endorse this. Take them. Take as much as you want.
The thing is, you mystify it. It's just fancy melatonin. People are like, oh, what is this sleep hack, Merlin?
Just fancy melatonin.
I'm
like
sorry.
Someone who does not nap. It's got GABA. It's got GABA, and GABA is very important. Do you know about GABA?
I now do. Yeah.
That's the kids show, Yo Gabba Gabba.
Well, then maybe you should get a little more well-informed before you interrupt the men to say that something is just melatonin.
You got a good doctor. Really go Wikipedia that.
Okay, cut all of this out. Cut all of this out.
Nothing is getting cut out. This is a great episode. This is what the people tune in for.
It's so important to edit the show. Follow up. What happened? What is the resolution of the noise on the roof? You guys, last time we talked, you were going to strafe the roof and try to find out whether it was a rolling armadillo or some golf balls on a settee. What did you discover about what's happening on the roof?
So we went out immediately following the podcast with a recorder, and it was like 0 degrees. The drone was acting up, so probably actually because of the temperature, and I was trying to fix it, but we could not stay outside long enough to do it. And then it was too cold for a couple more days, and then it was raining, and today is actually the first day that was, I think, nice enough to go out and fly it, so we may go back out after the episode and see if we can find that armadillo. Or I don't know what, because it's not the armadillo. I think we decided it's the raccoon, and he's got the walnut, and he's rolling it around
so
like a
sweet
wheelbarrow.
I have a feeling we're gonna find a dead raccoon.
You think we missed our opportunity, that he was up there, but we took too long.
It was too cold. He
never got the walnut open.
And he was trying to escape. He had no food, so he...
Maybe he took some powders he heard about on a podcast.
That's a very, like, we were talking years ago about whether we should put a card about Muhammad in Cards Against Humanity. And I said, I was ultimately vetoed it, even though we thought of some funny jokes, because I that's not how I want to die. Like, I don't, because the thing is, if I get killed because we put a joke about Muhammad in Cards Against Humanity, the headline on the obituary is going to be like, he finally went too far. but
look at this guy.
Right. And I don't need, that's all I want is, I just don't want the way that I die to be some sort of teachable moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think about it a lot.
Like, I'd love to go out in, like, a shark attack, because it would be totally random and you couldn't draw much from it, really.
You don't want it to be instructive about where you went wrong.
Exactly. And dying because I took a powder that I heard about on a podcast, yeah. That honestly sounds like something that might happen to me.
It appeared that his cause of death was stuffing powders into his ass while he doing a self-asphyxiation. Turns out it was actually an infection from a nose hair.
Yeah. That's a life hack. You stuff the powder up your ass.
And you get MRSA virus.
Yeah. No, I heard that on the Tim Ferriss podcast. Number one podcast.
Gotta eat those almonds. You can come across a room. So, does the noise persist?
Not here. I cannot report hearing any noise right now.
Alex, your listener zero of the noise. Are you hearing the noise still?
A little bit last week when it was windy. So it's either orphans, a raccoon, or a ghost, because you know. So we'll see. I've lived with the noise so long that it's a part of me now.
Just tune it out.
I'm sending you a picture of my home screen, and I anxiously await your response.
Max, did you want to tell me about something you like?
Yeah, I do, Merlin. This episode of what podcast is this? Due by Friday is sponsored.
This is the other one.
Sponsored by our friends at MailChimp.
Ah, server submerged in oil.
They make underpants right. For cats and dogs.
I love MailChimp. But if you don't like the chimp after 100 nights, they'll deliver silver underpants instead.
Freddy is his name.
I love Freddy. And then they had that big book about Freddy. MailChimp, on one of the other programs.
I've made a career on MailChimp.
Yeah. On one of the other programs I do yesterday, I publicly implored the Mack Weldon Company to please send some underpants to Alex. Because she's been left out of the surfeit of silver underpants with which so many male podcasters have succeeded.
Listen, this podcast is doing very well. I think we need let's get some sponsors. Who do we want the stuff from?
Oh, that's a really good point. Geez. Okay, so if we are doing a swag... bears in your dock? Ugh.
Does Fabergé eggs sponsor podcasts?
Let's workshop it. Let's workshop. We could do it for a charity, although, you know, seriously, fuck charities. But
I feel that we should be seriously considering. We've made some very provocative statements on this podcast, and I
very
think that
bold,
we could make
very
it
brave.
Right. And now I don't want to become a target, so I'm wondering maybe we should give a little money to the Trump Foundation.
Well, that's a good idea. And he won't even know about it. He'll read about it in the papers like everybody else.
Right.
So with the Mack Weldon underwear, there's like silver is the brand, and then there's air knit, there's woven. So is only one of them antimicrobial?
They got a jersey thing, and then they've got like silver in the threads. I think
all of these men are very hairy. I don't. Oh.
Rumpelstiltskin was his name. Also, airmail has added custom actions.
That hair,
custom
Alex,
actions.
That means they're alpha males. High yep. T, they're taking a lot of powders.
Got the douche right here.
You take your powders. Here's the deal. You take your powders, then you lift. You get a lot of energy at the gym.
I should do that. I'll pack a bowl in my douche.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you could totally make a bong out of this. People love their marijuana. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's about it for this week. I want to thank our sponsors for this week. Alex Jones, Alex Ross, Alex Temkin. I want to thank really everybody who's been contributing, and it's been a great time. We'll see you next time.
Well, and this podcast, let's not forget to thank the Tim Ferriss podcast, and we'll hear a clip from that now. Here's Tim.
Oh, God, that was amazing. How does he do it? He's like a human guinea pig.
You just can't be afraid to experiment on yourself. Mm. If you hear about some, you know, herb on a podcast, the brave, courageous thing to do is you take it immediately.
Hmm. So, kind of a, like a Johnny Knoxville type situation.
Can I describe the thing that I got from ThinkGeek today?
Yes.
I got a Star Trek The Next Generation magnetic communicator badge that goes on your shirt with a magnet.
I've seen that, yeah.
And you tap it, and it's Bluetooth. Let's see what happens. I just charged it. Let's see what happens. Was that the thing? What the?
Well, is it playing that every
music?
Time, Max?
It's playing music. Hang on. How do I Siri? How do I do Siri?
Nice.
Answer voice recognition.
Is that from the show, that music?
Voice indication. Chirp. See if it'll... It's just playing random music from my iPhone. All right, I need this needs some more work.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the future, they don't need money anymore. They've worked everything out. And, yeah. So anyway, Airmail has added custom actions. That should be good for you guys. Is there anything else you want to cover this week, or we're pretty much done, right?
Just now watching Max Fiddle with his... what are they... Is that a badge? What are they called?
Isn't it a communicator?
The little things.
Here we go.
Wear?
Here we go. All right. Here, I'm now going to demo the communicator badge. Call Trin. Call Trin. We're almost there. Call Alex. Call Alex.
I hear something.
Not Alex Sobol. Call Alex Cox.
They edited a lot of this. They would edit out of the program before they aired it.
Okay, one more time.
Going very, very well.
It's a good demo.
Call Alex Cox. Call Alex Cox.
Oh, look, it worked. Hi, Max.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, that was fun. We're done with this.
Wait, I had questions to talk to you about.
That sounds horrible. Oh, that... So, wait, do you talk into the badge?
It's not clear to me. I'm holding them both up to my mouth.
Just like on the TV show.
This does seem like the kind of device that we would have right before civilization collapses.
Merlin, people are... okay, I need to know, what was your dream with Steve Jobs about?
It's really hard to explain, but basically... I was living in a large, verdant tube that was slightly too small to accommodate standing up, and it was very, very long. And all I knew was that Steve Jobs had died, but Steve Jobs was there, and I had to be in a play about Steve Jobs. I had almost no time to learn my parts, and I wasn't even sure who I was supposed to be. I was given a small pamphlet, much like a religious tract, that I did not have time to read, let alone to memorize, and this made me stressed out, partly because I was living in a verdant tube. And then at one point, I started freaking out a little bit, and I realized that I had parked my car in the wrong place, even though I don't have a car. And I found out, Phil Schiller had told me, look, the way that you are parked in a very dangerous place. And then when I went out to find the car, it wasn't my car, but it was my car. And it had a very, 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 very large parking ticket on it. And at this point, I'm freaking out. I don't have any pants. I'm out of the tube, and I'm waiting backstage to go into this play that I haven't even read yet. And Phil Schiller walks up, and he says, listen, don't worry about it. Michael Damian's here. We're giving the part to Michael Damian. And then I went out, and that was pretty much the end of the dream. Michael Damian was a soap opera star who had a hit in the 80s with a cover of the song Rock On.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah.
I was just gripped from beginning to end.
But he was dead, but he wasn't dead.
Do you feel that maybe you were... Now, I'm not, you know, a very religious person, but do you think that maybe you were visited by Steve Jobs' angel? Because that, you know, that can happen to people.
Right. No, I'm really mulling it over. Well, I believe in dragons. So,
What was he trying to communicate to you in this vision?
Well, that's the problem, is he was dead, but he wasn't dead. So he was kind of there, but he wasn't there. He was not in the verdant tube. He was in a different part of the warehouse. Oh, this is all happening in a warehouse.
Do you think he's doing an Andy Kaufman?
I don't think so. I don't dream about like famous people very often. The main thing though was the tube. I did not like the tube. When I say verdant, it was like there was like grass growing around the ring, like Interstellar style. Like it was a big curvy grassy tube. And the parking, I mean, like when I say this is a very, very, I couldn't fit the parking ticket in the car if I wanted to. I parked in a very inconvenient place. So Airmail has added custom actions. Is this one going to go the way of Parks and Recreation episode, you think?
I like Airmail. I'm getting a lot of use out of Airmail, and I think it's probably the best mail app for the iPhone right now. I'm going to come out and say that confidently. I think it's the best mail app for the iPhone right now.
Oh, you want to tell us about something you like?
I do. This episode, it's brought to you by... Wait, did I do that?
Yes.
Did someone just make
what
that sound?
What did I do? Jimmy Wire. You make me laugh.
Who is sponsoring this episode? Who is sponsoring this episode?
Alex, can you hear what it's saying?
If I turn the gain up.
Is he wearing a headset? No, I just want to know, because it sounds like he's just talking into his shirt.
He is.
Okay. Alexa, is Max almost done?
Who is the sponsor of this episode?
Allow me to direct you to Apple's rather fabulous website.
Wow. Well,
let's go. We'll get four more years
that
of that.
Settles it. This episode is brought to you by the computer company Apple.
Well, they're Apple. A lifestyle company.
We don't make apples.
That's my pick of the week.
Digga, 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 digga.
Apple.
Yeah. You guys ready to start?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know what? Last time we were about an hour in, but before it started to get good. So here we are.
Yeah.
How you doing, Merlin?
Oh, big week. Yeah, we cut out of S4E2 of Sherlock just at the right time.
Oh,
I watched Sherlock, and it was a bunch of British people who I didn't like mumbling autistically at each other. Mm. And it's not for me, right?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. It's okay. The guy who does Doctor Who. Of course, you hate it.
Okay, all right, of course.
But you like House, so like, do you ironically enjoy House MD? Or
he doesn't like beautiful things. Is the problem
that?
House is a dumb but very well executed drama with like perfect episode structure, great acting, and I like Sherlock was just so like goofy, and they were showing people's like phones on the screen. The characters talk too quietly.
They do subtitles.
It's like a real problem. Okay, but that's not just me, right? It's legitimately hard to hear the dialogue in the show.
It's because we're dumb Americans and we can't understand British speak.
But also the music, I mean, like I've said this other places, but the music bed is pretty loud at points when it's the most interesting part of the show, when like Sherlock is explaining the thing. Here's the thing about Stephen Moffat, like, and everybody who likes Stephen Moffat or doesn't like Stephen Moffat, shut up, but don't listen to this. But basically, Stephen Moffat shows are about feeling smart and crying. And if you feel pandered to about how you're supposed to feel smart about a Stephen Moffat show, or you don't want stuff that's overtly there to make you cry, you're not going to enjoy it. If you don't embrace that, a lot of Stephen Moffat is about feeling smart.
I have an insight. Here
this
we go.
Is
this is why
brave.
People listen to this podcast. Hang on. I just rubbed two brain cells together and I thought of something smart to say. All right. Did you guys go back and watch the iPhone a keynote? Because we just had the 10-year anniversary of it.
Yes.
Okay. Twice in 2 days.
I've been thinking about it because it's a perfect, I mean, it really is one of the best like speech, like forget like Apple keynotes. It's like one of the best speeches ever. Like I still get excited about the iPhone and I like own it, right? It's just an amazing presentation. And here's what I think is the difference between the Steve Jobs presentation of 2007, 2006 when that came out?
Seven.
And, you know, a sort of Apple keynote now, which is the Steve Jobs thing. It's, we talked about this last week, that there's a coolness to it, but it's so underplayed. He underplays everything and he doesn't overexplain it. And you as the audience, you get to actually feel smart for understanding the importance of what he's saying. He leaves just a little bit there for you. And lets you connect all the dots so you understand why the product is so great. And he doesn't spend a lot of time telling you that it's great. He just sort of presents it in a very under... He presents a legitimately cool thing in an underplayed way and sets you to understand... Sets you up to understand why it's so good. And you just feel like a genius watching that because you're like, yes, I'm on the same side as Steve Jobs and this is brilliant and I get it. And I'm one of the cool, smart people who gets it. That is what I do not like about the current Apple keynotes, and that's what I don't like about Sherlock and Doctor Who, is they're setting it up for you. It's just telling you that how great it is in right there. I do not like that.
What? Alex, I know this is an area of importance for you. Do you want to talk? I have thoughts here, but you should jump in about the keynote if you want.
Okay.
But, or would you rather talk about Sherlock?
The screen has over 1 million nits of brightness, and it's a great screen. You're really going to be able to see the pictures of bumblebees that you take.
We're really excited to see what people are going to do with this. Honestly, we're legitimately, like, we're quivering with excitement because
like
we sure as fuck haven't figured out what we're doing with it.
And this one here. I do like how Steve is like a phone, an iPod, and an internet communicator. And when he says
are you
internet,
getting this?
Well, but then when he says internet communicator, people are just like, whoa, like they don't get it. It's really, I mean, I don't know. His keynotes when they were at Macworld were amazing because he was a rock star in that room, and it's easy to be the cool guy there. And I'm not downplaying how amazing the iPhone keynote is because I've watched it 3 times in the past week.
You have to understand how that at that time people carried 3 devices in their pockets. They had a phone, mm-hmm. they had a Palm Pilot, and they had an iPod. So when he is saying,
in my case, like a flip camera. Like I carried my flip camera almost everywhere.
Yes, and that's right. Mm-hmm. Setting aside, the camera wasn't even a major part of that product. Like the camera, it was a long time before the photos weren't like potato quality on the iPhone. But you have to understand, like when the gears in people's minds, I mean, yeah, I remember when I saw it for the first time and I was thinking like, oh, this is cool, but it's like, fuck, like I don't want to buy 3 things. Like, you know, that's, and when the gears start turning and you realize, you know, it's set up so you get it 1 second before he says it, right? And when mm-hmm. you start to see that it's coming together and they're making one product and it does all this shit and it's going to not have to make you carry 3 things around and the benefits of all these things working together as he's like listing the features, you just feel like a genius because you're getting the same moment of invention that Apple had.
But that's exactly how Stephen Moffat and how all of HouseMD is written.
No, in a Stephen Moffat show, a character looks into the camera and goes, I'm very smart. Let's travel through time. You're smart, too. Are you crying yet? Here's my scarf.
I have one old note, one new note. My old note is I've always really... One thing was with Steve's presentations, yeah, sure, he was kind of a cocky asshole, but you could also, in the really good ones for a really good product, and in this case, I think maybe more than ever, without being over the top about it, you could feel how happy he was and how proud he was of this thing and what it did and how many times he just like runs his finger across to unlock and goes, isn't that cool? And like he's, I don't think he's saying that to like get a reaction. I think he's honestly going, isn't that cool? His enthusiasm for that product is shot through everything that he's doing. The thing that I only got in the last couple of viewings that I probably should have earlier is I almost want to call this storytelling, but the masterful order in which he lays out each one of these new things that this does. If you think about it, like if you got the order of here's the thing. There are so many new things in this. The idea of not having a keyboard, the idea of this being a touchscreen. Like as I said in text earlier today, when he first shows how scrolling works, well, he doesn't show scrolling. The first time you flip your finger to scroll, he doesn't do that for voicemail messages. He does that for music for iPod.
But do you,
he's showing you how to flip. That's something you're already familiar with.
But don't you see the contrast of you as the audience are seeing this and your mind is racing with possibilities as you're understanding this? It's literally the coolest shit ever. And he is standing there going, isn't that neat? Like the contrast of that where he's downplaying it and making and he's being cool and withholding. And you're sitting there going, holy shit, give me this thing. And he's like, hey, isn't that neato?
And stuff that seems, I showed this to my daughter. I was telling you, I showed this to my daughter last night. She's like, yeah, it's a phone. That's what phones do. And I had to go out and pull out an old Samsung and show it to her. It looked like something from the 50s. And she's like, well, you know, she's nine. She's not going to get this. But that's the revolution. It's watching this thing 10 years ago. He's doing stuff nobody had seen all in one place before. I mean, anything, you ever try and use a touchscreen? How about this? Did you ever have a Chumby? Did you ever try and use a Chumby? It's one of those little beanbag flash-based.
This is a public space.
Yeah, I'm not trying to give Russian intelligence any leverage over me, Merlin.
It's not a bit. I mean, Chumby was an open source project to have a home device with a very tiny little capacitive screen. It looked like a little beanbag, and you could develop flash apps. And, you know, there's a little community around it. It was all open source. But you had to, like, to get a button to click. Like, think about using a GPS in 2006 or 7. Like, you had to use a pencil to make it, like, oh, I want that button. And the idea of just going flip and flying through your songs, nobody had seen that. And but then, I mean, stuff even that today, and this is the funny part today, is so much as you go, like, oh, that's dumb. But, like, it turns sideways. He turns it sideways, and the orientation changes. And not only does the orientation change, like an adaptive web design, oh no, now you're in cover flow. Holy shit! Is there a wizard in there? Like, how did he do it? And then flip, flip, flip. No lag. I mean, it's just, but he did it in a certain order where, like, so much of the entire rollout of the iPhone, in some ways, it was so masterful in the way that they gave it to you. It's like bringing in the Grays, right? We're just going to give you enough to get you, like, comfortable with what this thing is. We have to call this a phone, even though the phone's not the big part of it. But, like, that's what you're going to understand. And as I roll out these features, and, you know, he doesn't even start with the phone, right? He starts with the iPod part because that's the part everybody knows. And he's able to demo these crazy UI features and stuff you already understand before he moves into the new technology and explains, like, what he means by internet communicator. I just thought that was masterful.
Say what you will about Steve Jobs, but he would have gone all the way and pissed on those hookers himself.
Jazz break.
He probably would have had a huge chumby while he did it, too.
All right, Merlin.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Merlin.
Yeah, how's it going, Alex? I should probably go in a minute.
How?
All right, let's start this thing.
Challenge. Alex, this week you had a challenge for us.
All right. The challenge was really just because I want to see if Merlin can get all of his icons on one screen on his iPhone. And you've yet to share your home screen with me, Merlin.
No, I haven't done that yet.
No.
Wait, why? What just happened? Why did that happen?
What happened? Did you pick yourself on the mic? What happened?
My thing happened. My thing went off.
Oh, wait, was that you?
The little
your voice activated? Is that what's happening?
I really wish that this was a bit and I was the one doing it, but it's just
Alexa, who's like, the mother of dragons?
Daenerys, Stormborn of the House Targaryen, the first of her name, the Unburnt, Queen of Meereen, Queen of the Andals and the Rhoynar and the First Men, Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea, Breaker of Chains, and Mother of Dragons.
That's so cool.
Well, it's been a big week. I think we covered a lot of good stuff. We learned that Steve Jobs probably would have peed on the hooker himself because he ain't no cuck. Isn't that cool? Boom.
Well, I can report on doing my icons.
I want to hear this. I'm like the kid who keeps sliding down the bench hoping he'll never have to go to the principal's office. Maybe they won't notice me in the school will close.
I started by changing the weather app on my phone. So I went from dark sky to weatherline. Then I realized that weatherline has a, I don't know what you call it, a widget in the pull down screen.
Yes.
And then, so I added that widget, and then I realized I needed to reorganize all my widgets. So I did that, and I have a very clean, I have a very efficient widget ecosystem now on my phone. And then I ran out of time, and the challenge was over. So that's as far as I got.
How many widgets would you say you have, Max?
Alex, I'm glad that you asked me that. I have, let's see, I'm running 7 widgets right now. So I've got batteries on top, and that the batteries, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, it tells you how much juice is left in your Siri balls. They're right in there. And then I've got Weatherline, that tells me the weather. I have the Fantastical widget, which is like, honestly, that I use that widget 20 times a day. It's a very good widget. The OmniFocus widget, Just Press Record, Deliveries, and I have, and here's my hot pick. Do you guys know about Thessa? I don't know if this is relevant to you. But
no,
I have a Nest learning thermostat in my house. Do you guys know that?
I didn't. Thing?
Do you have that?
No.
Oh, the Nest is just like an internet connected thermostat.
Oh no, I know what a Nest is. We're not animals.
Oh, sorry, I don't know. All right.
Wait a minute. You have where to make heat come in house? How is possible for this? Where you put rock collection?
All right. Calm down, everyone.
I'm strong like bull.
Thessa is a third-party like interface that can talk to your Nest, and it puts and it, you can control the temperature right in the widget. So if I want to change the temperature, I don't have to like – oh, and it also puts it on your Apple Watch. But I don't have to like open up the – find the app and open it up. I just pull right down, zoop, and there's the temperature, and I can be like plus or minus a few degrees.
Nice.
How do you spell this thing? I'm just getting
– T-H-E-S-S-A.
Ah.
Thessa. Sometimes I'm lying in bed, and I'm like, you know what? It's too cold.
I require more heat.
And the Nest itself is clear across the bedroom. So I have to get out of bed and take upwards of 20 steps.
All right, so that's Merlin.
That's what goes through my mind whenever I text my wife when we're in the same room. The other night, she for my birthday back in November, she got me this. I won't say the name of the company because they're kind of eating the booger. But since you get like a delivery of grass-fed meats once a month. And
did,
so,
you, did she get you a Theranos machine?
Technically, Peter Thiel did.
Hook this up to your body.
Well, let me tell you about something I like. This podcast is brought to you by Theranos, the all-in-one testing solution. They take one drop of blood. Listen, it's supposed to be medically impossible, but these people have it figured out. And you should get a lot. Listen, if there's one thing I know, it's that you should get a lot of your medical and science news from podcasts. And I have a good feeling about this company, Theranos. Their CEO, she's the female Steve Jobs. She's been on a lot of magazine covers.
Yep. Yeah, she wears black. And I think their main revenue model is laying people off. That's a model. Zero is a percentage. So the meat, you got a little warning that, hey, the meat's on the way. FedEx is sending your meat. And that was on the 3rd. Now, FedEx has had a lot of problems because of weather. And so I've been tracking it. And I've been watching this box of meat be passed around the Midwest for coming up on 10 days now. And finally, I wanted to contact these people and say, hey, what's up with the meat? I don't think I'm going to want this meat when it arrives. So now it's going to be my job to get rid of all this dead meat. But yeah, she was there on the couch, and I sent her a screenshot of FedEx and had remarks about it because I didn't want to actually talk about it.
Are you saying that's bad?
I don't know. I'm not even sure. They just laid off 40% of their staff. Theranos. But they still find a way to sponsor podcasts. So God bless them. Thank you, Theranos, for supporting Due by Friday.
Yes, and make sure you use the offer code Steve Jobs Full Piss on checkout when you order your Theranos machine.
Steve's no cuck. One word. Steve's no cuck.
Our thanks to Theranos.
Isn't that cool? Boom. I just urinated on two ladies. Let me show you how slide down lock works. No. Anyway, big week. Go ahead. All right, go ahead.
So Merlin.
The bench is empty. The principal has come out of the office. I am the only one sitting on the bench. And I urinated myself like a cuck.
That can happen when you take a lot of powders.
classic misdirection. Anyway, what's the challenge for next week? I think it's Max's turn.
Oh, God. I need to buy some time here. Merlin, what'd you do with your phone?
Sorry? What? Okay. Okay. I hate this challenge. I hate everything about this challenge. No, I love Alex. I hate the premise of this challenge. I hate what I'm required to do for this challenge. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, I hate the premise of this challenge. But that point of the show.
Why is that? You need to explain to the internet.
A whole nother episode about why I don't like the premise of this challenge. Because I feel like I don't like the feeling the need to generate care about things that I don't think need care, and I don't like getting beat up for being unwilling to generate that care. And it's why I, as my friend John Syracuse says, sometimes I return no, where it's like I wish it were okay for me to just not care how my phone looks. You know what I mean? And it's like, and now the thing is, even having this program, it's not about you, Alex. This is about those horrible people that are going to like have all these remarks about how I do or don't do things on an iPhone. And it's just like the ultimate personalization is doing fuck all title. And like to me, like the buttons are there. I can find them. I don't think about any of this ever. Now you can respond to that or I can tell you what I did.
Well, that's the old way of doing things, Merlin, but here's the new way. Open Overcast.
Was that you?
Oh,
open
boy.
Open Overcast. God, so bad. Nothing works.
Oh. See, Merlin, so why can't I just not care about myself and my sleep?
Well, okay, so here's what I tried to do, and I think that this is maybe my own headcanon, as we say in the Doctor Who community. This might be my own headcanon about how this show works, but I think part of the show is you try to do the challenge. Ideally, you do the challenge, but I think also you can try to do the challenge and explain why it was difficult. So here's what I did. And boy, I this is a whole nother show. It's just we've got to talk about Apple things at some point. Oh, my God. So I am a inveterate backer-upper of my phone. I do iCloud nightly, and I try to make a point of backing up, doing iTunes encrypted backup. I want to say once a week, but more like every 10 to 14 days, because I just know that that's the only way to really back up your phone. So I do that a lot. So I was backing up my phone. I had it hooked up, and I thought, okay, I got to do the challenge. And so I teleported back to something like 2009 and opened up iTunes. I think I sent you a screen grab of this. And I said, okay, step one, I got to go in and just delete all of the shit I know I don't need. Right? You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that make sense? Like, it's like the whole tidying thing. It's like the whole Marie Condominium thing. Like, first you got to get rid of stuff before you buy boxes for the shit you got. And the thing is, the affordances for doing this in any kind of a... Like, so much shit on iOS. The affordances for doing stuff that almost everybody wants to do are virtually non-existent. So, like, for me... Okay, how about this? You ever... This probably won't go for you guys. Have you ever opened up a really, really, really old app on your phone or iPad, and it pops up with that message? Basically, this application may make your iPad run slowly.
No.
I've gotten that.
Okay, so I don't know what... I can intuit that is an app that has not been updated for some improvement in the technology, whether that's for battery life or for some kind of functionality, but that's a pretty good sign, wouldn't you say? The fact that that app is so old that they have now added some bit of code that detects that it's shitty and throws up that dialogue box or that interstitial, right? That makes sense. That's not something the developer put in there, probably. Let people know that my app sucks. It's the fact that it's a 4 or 5 year old app and it has not been updated to, deal with the modernness of a new iOS. So Apple's solution to that is to have that thing pop up. Like, why in the fuck can't I go to some kind of a smart folder that shows me every single app that would produce that message if I opened it? Doesn't that make sense? Doesn't that seem like really sensible? But you can't. You go through and you go onesie twosie. And you go through, and if you're in iTunes, you can see like by date added, you can see by size. You can't see by frequency. You can't see by last launched. You can't see by every conceivable way that you would want to remove the majority of over 400 apps from your phone. And now, welcome to the land of Clicky Draggy, where Steve Jobs is no cuck. Because now you're going to go into Clicky Draggy land, and 1Z, 2Z, 3Z, you're going to go in, oh, you got two copies of this app because one's really old and one's, which Instapaper do I delete? Don't ask me, I'm iTunes. Dirt. So I sit there like a fucking animal, and I'm clicking onesie, twosie, clicky, draggy, trying like a motherfucker to get rid of as many apps as I can. And by the time I was done, I still had, I want to say, 350 apps.
Jesus Christ. Oh.
Well, you see my problem. I need this for my work.
I'm very well.
Like, what work though? Like.
Yeah, I don't really have a job. No,
honestly, because I have a few things on my phone. Like, so I go through this all the time. Like, just when I'm like stuck on a train without Wi-Fi or, you know, without signal or something, I periodically just open my phone and start clearing stuff away because, like, you know, here we go. I'm opening it up right now, and here we go. I have the ArcLight Theaters app because, like, one time I needed to book tickets for a group to see the Star Wars movie at ArcLight. Stop it! Why is this happening to me? One time I needed to book tickets to see Star Wars at ArcLight, and so and I don't need that. So I'm going to delete it. And, like, right. That's the thing is, like, if I need that app, it's in the cloud. I can get it. It's all in the cloud now.
Okay, so you've got 10 or 15 pages of apps, and you've decided to get rid or to organize all of those apps. I know you guys don't get this problem because you're not a hoarder, but just for a minute, pretend that there are people in the world that have 15 pages of apps. Okay, so how do you start getting rid of it? How do you decide what to get rid of before you even
organize?
You're going to need
a lot of Kleenex, and then you're going to go into the fetal position in the corner and say, way of the future, way of the future, way of the future.
Because there's no equivalent of show in Finder. If you go and do a search and you go like, oh, I'm pretty sure this dumbass app, if I can remember the name and go find it, there's no show in Finder. You just go flipping through.
Eventually, Alec Baldwin will come to the door and then your butler will become very concerned about you and he'll give you a sponge bath.
Oh, nice. Oh, of course. The guy from, was it Eastern Airlines or is that Alan Alda? Who am I thinking of? Alan Alda's the senator, right? Alec Baldwin is the airlines guy.
Right. Remember, he comes outside the room and condescendingly talks to Leonardo DiCaprio
when he's in the theater. Oh my God, it's so rough. So anyway, that's, you know, setting aside for just a moment that, like, getting organized on my phone does not matter to me to do this challenge. I was trying, and I don't mean to turn this around and just yell at Apple, but, like, you know, it's, you know, I'm very tempted to, I don't want to say start over because I don't want to lose all my logins and stuff. One thing that Apple has gotten, knock on wood, Apple has gotten quite good at is if you, for the sake of argument, got a new phone, hypothetically, and you had an encrypted backup, you might go from out of the box to running in well under 2 hours, which is a revelation. Don't you think? I mean, isn't that kind of still amazing? If you've got an iCloud backup and the weather's right that day, you might be able to do it in like 3 or 4 hours. That part is amazing. I didn't want to have to reset up everything from nothing, and I got all this shit on there, and it's like iTunes is just like laughing at me, laughing and pointing and laughing, and I'm the cuck. So I sent you a screenshot. I'm down to 376 apps.
I think what happened here, Alex, God. Did you get on, or you were already on one screen? This wasn't even a challenge for you.
No. Well, I did have
Alex, I think you cucked us.
Yeah, well, you know me.
Who's peeing on whom?
I don't know how your phone works. Like, it is.
You keep saying these words. I got the iPhone when I was 41, and I got lots of apps because that's what I did. And over time, I've gotten rid of a bunch of them.
Do you still have the app where you can tilt the phone and it drinks the beer?
Oh yeah, and it gives you a mustache. Yeah, I use that all the time. I need that for my work.
Way in the future.
Nothing I do to explain this to you is going to make a whole lot of sense.
No. It's more of like, I literally don't know how the phone does not constantly crash.
Do you understand how computers work, Alex?
Well, the people at the Apple Store don't, because they keep telling me to delete.
You got to quit all your apps to free up the memory.
Oh, God.
Oh, you should.
It's good for the battery.
Right.
Let me ask you this question. When you buy a new phone, do you restore from backup, or do you set it up as a new device?
Me or Alex?
But just general conversation for the whole table.
I always...
Oh, am I allowed to participate? This is very...
I'm saying about something I like. I always restore from backup.
Alex?
Why? It depends. Usually, if it is a new number of a phone, like perhaps going from the 6 to the 7, then yes. But if it's like the 6 to the 6S, or I'm sorry, I got...
backwards, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a talk update, you'll do it, but for a full number, you start fresh.
Right.
I feel very strongly about this, and here's my opinion. I always set it up as a new phone. And here's the reason, is the Apple ecosystem has, I think rightly, has gotten a lot more complicated than it once was. And there's all kinds of permissions and notifications and all kinds of craziness that apps can get to communicate with each other and get your location and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And this is good. It's like the natural evolution of the app ecosystem. Apps are getting a little more power on the phone, access to more stuff. They can do more things for you. But it also means you have to keep in mind everyone's trying to fuck you and you don't want to get fucked. You have 1,000 little apps on your phone. They're all trying to fuck you all the time. And here's the thing is you get cruffed when you... As you're putting all these apps on your phone, you open it up and you're like, sure, I'll share access to my location. Sure, I'll let you send me notifications. Sure, I'll do this or that. All you're doing is you're getting fucked over and over and over in a million little ways until your phone is peeing on you. And when you get that new phone, you set it up as a new phone, and at least you have to think for 1 second before you put in an app on the phone and it goes, this app is requesting permission to fuck you. Would you like to get fucked? And oh, yeah. That's how you pee on the phone. Do you see what I'm saying?
Every time you get a new one, it's sort of like there's that horrible, like 95% horrible feeling when your credit card is compromised and you have to get a new credit card. But then also that's really an opportunity. Like every time you have to go back in and re-enter your credit card for all of those things.
Yes.
In the past, I've done the thing where I just wait until I had a Google Save search for like credit card update, rejected, whatever. It was so much easier to just wait for stuff to break and then only update. I know that's not very responsible, but it was so much easier than going in and rotely re-entering it for everything, and all those eels get all over you.
I'm telling you, the other day I like went into my PayPal account to like I was trying to do some business in PayPal, and I went into this tab within a folder that's there's some hidden option screen, and you know on PayPal there's this whole thing of like recurring payments that you can authorize like apps and services to do a little recurring payment within PayPal. Mm-hmm. I was paying for 40 fucking things, 99 cents a month for the pro feature of this or that or some goddamn like ad free time thing that you recommended, Merlin, that was in there. And these things they sucker onto you, and they just suck your blood until you cancel the credit card or set the new phone up. And I feel very strongly that part of having good like digital hygiene and not getting fucked all the time is you got to set that phone up new.
That's really good advice. Somebody the other day, I just happened across something that somebody retweeted from this guy saying, I'm not even sure why, but the guy's like, hey, go in and like delete all the applications that you have authorized for Twitter. And I went ahead and I checked the link. I followed the link and I was like, I'm not sure why I'm doing this, but it'd be fun to just go look. And, you know, to their credit, Twitter does a good thing of like saying like, here's the app, here's the description, here's the icon when appropriate, and here's the date that you authorized this. Guys, I mean, it was at least dozens of apps. So many apps that I haven't even thought about. Like the old original Twitter apps, the Birdie Birdseed, like back in the day, all the old apps. So much stuff from 2010 that I was still authorized for. So I agree. I think there's definitely something. I do that frequently with Google and Dropbox, where I will go in and like, if there's something I haven't used in a while, I hit the X. But you're right. That is a understandably sensible way to do that, Max. Do you feel the same way, Alex, or similar way?
I'm just now looking at all the applications that I've approved with Twitter. I almost don't want to revoke access to Birdhouse.
I know. Doesn't it hurt your heart? You're like, oh, it's like it's like keeping contacts for people who've died. You're like, I can't do this.
Merlin, can you briefly tell us what Birdhouse is?
Birdhouse.
Some people are here for me, you know.
Why don't you tell people what Birdhouse is?
Oh, man. I'm going to put it in a note. Birdhouse was this application that I truly loved that you could put all of your mean tweets into, and then later, when you were less mad, you could look at them and delete them or tweet them if you really wanted to. It was
a place to put the drafts that
it was
you were
really
thinking
good.
About. Yeah.
The description is perfect. A notepad for Twitter on your iPhone. Oh.
Yep. It's a good app.
All right. I now drank a lot of water for the bit earlier, and
I have to
really
pee
need to
so
pee
so badly.
So, and we've had a lot of pee
hit the
talk.
Bucket. I hit the bucket once. Problematic.
All right.
I'm muted.
Listen, I have a challenge. Can we progress to my challenge?
We can, and I will take more cannon fire about this. I realize we're running a little bit long because we had 2 hours of politics we're cutting out. But no, I'm willing to be in the line of fire about this. And I'm also willing to, if you're interested, to defend to the extent I can, like, why I am this way. But, like, you know, I tried. But, like, it's just – now I am just blaming Apple. But, like, they do not make it very easy. Okay, so here's one of my classic bits about the Apple TV that I think you can expand to a whole lot of Apple devices. I'm about to bitch about Apple, so everybody can just suck a nut. All of their apps work fine as long as you never use them. Their apps will work mostly okay if you use them just a little bit. If you use Apple's products a lot, and you have not found how they're fucked up, you're not actually using them a lot. And so the scalability of, like, hey, whoop-a-doop-a-doo, I'll move all my Apple stock apps into this thing called Neat Apple Thingies, that does not scale up to 400 apps. And there is no accommodation for taking care of that in any way but onesie-twosie, clicky-draggy, either in iTunes or on the phone, and that drives me nuts. So is it my own fault for getting into that situation? Well, it's my own fault for agreeing to do this podcast, but, like, I don't think there are all kinds of things, and I would love to talk about this at some point. To me, there are all kinds of things that you could introduce into the iOS ecosystem that would improve things. Things like the Siri app suggestions seem so random sometimes. Why don't you just follow, like, what 5 apps I use all the time, and make a smart folder that will let me launch those, or make a suggestion to put that in the dock. Hey, you've had this thing in the dock for 4 years, whatever the fuck you call it. You, in your little bottom thingy, you've had this in here for years and you never use it. Would you prefer to have this there? Like, that's the intelligence I want, is, like, you know, you tell me how to organize my screen. You know what I mean?
You wanna hear a good one?
Yes.
Siri, play Overcast. Oh, god damn it.
3, 2, 1.
Siri, play Overcast. Oh, now it just does nothing. Sometimes what it does is it plays a heavy metal band named Overcast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We've all experienced that. I feel like they're one of my...
Have you tried asking for us on The Lady in a Tube?
Oh, you don't want to people... No, I've not talked
The response
talked
is kind of funny.
What
it's
is that? You lost me. Is this your dream again?
Cut this out. Alexa, play Due by Friday.
I can't find the song What We Do on Friday.
There's another one.
Alexa,
on,
order condoms. Leave that in.
Cut this out. Alexa, play Due by Friday on TuneIn.
For a station for Friday, right?
Anyway, so I'm working on getting us into TuneIn.
Leave this one in. Alexa, order a book on how to give the correct voice commands to Alexa.
Alexa, stop. Quite a whirl we got. 376 apps.
Oh. Yeah.
It pains you. It pains you to know that. How does my phone even work?
Well, like, seriously, I have... I think it was the iPhone 4. I went through, like, 7 phones all under warranty, and they kept just being like, something with the logic board, blah 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 blah. You can't use so many apps. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And now I feel like it doesn't happen quite as often.
But that's caused you to be a little more conservative about shoveling tons of crap.
Oh yeah, no, I completely agree with you, and I just haven't. This challenge was mostly to make you squirm because I hated napping so much.
That'll show me.
My favorite thing ever is to make men on the internet mad about my home screen, and it brings me joy every Thanksgiving. And
wait,
just,
what, people get mad about your home screen?
Your screen, or you're mad about theirs?
Both. It's just one big hate fest of meaningless dialogue, and I love it. That's all. It's fun, you know, to care about things that are completely arbitrary and mean nothing.
Well, it's a little bit of a milk for me. I mean, I realize you're being somewhat jokey about it, but like, I feel like you are like the person in Blink, the book by Malcolm Gladwell. I feel like you are seeing things that I don't see. I don't say that I can't see, but I kind of feel like I can't see. Like, you are seeing decisions, distinctions that I'm like, what made you make that noise about a home screen? It's just apps. Like, and I'm not criticizing, but that's the fascinating part to me is I think you do have, I don't know if it's an aesthetic, a sensibility, if it's taste, if it's functionality, but like, it feels like you're like the guy who can look at the statue and tell whether it's fake in the movie or in the book, Blink. You can do that. And I don't know how you do it. I think it's amazing. And I'm not sure what is it that you see when you look at a screen and go, whoa, that's all wrong.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I can recognize that there's no wrong way to organize your home screen.
But what do you think, though? What do you see where you go? Like, in this case, I don't understand why you have this giant blank space at the bottom. You have a reason for that.
Because my thumb is not big enough to access all the icons. Like, really, if I have the same number of icons as in the original iPhone up until the iPhone 4. So now, and now I have this new theory that the reason I just can't, like, everyone hears me bitch every 5 minutes about how hard it is to
Oh, is that you doing this? Are you
no.
doing this? Why is it going?
I don't know.
We should go back and time it. I think it might be on some kind of an automated thing. And maybe it's a mindfulness app, Max. Have you thought of that? It's remembering you. Oh, be mindful.
Yeah, we were all typing on the same phone for like 7 years, and then suddenly these two monster phones came. And I'm wondering, I don't know, like if I feel like I'm the cranky old man with the cherry switch keyboard because I'm like, oh, my keyboard's too wide. But yeah, no, I don't care that much.
I also have two rows of blank icons on the bottom of my home screen, and it's important to me. I actually am very careful not to put icons down there. And here's the here's the reason. There's, and it has nothing to do with that for me, my hand size, because I have huge normal hands. Mm-hmm. You know what that means? It means I can reach all the icons.
You're no cuck.
I'm not a cuck. I pee right on that phone. Here's the thing for me is when I open the phone, a lot of times I know I have a task that I'm quickly trying to accomplish. So an example of that would be I'm trying to write something in OmniFocus that I don't want to forget, or I'm trying to send a quick text to Veronica, or I'm trying to like start a podcast in Overcast while I'm cooking and like, you know, I'm not trying to like have my phone out a lot. So I'm trying to like hit and run, like get this quick thing done. And when I open up my phone, I don't want 50 options. I want just the few that I need right there. So that's why I have this, like, my first screen. It's very sparse, and all I have are, like, the key things that I use every day on my phone in, like, a pinch. You know, things like the timer and text messages and the phone application. Because when I open my phone, I don't need to visually, you know, process 70 things and try and find the one that I want. Like, I'm looking for very few options. I find that white space on the bottom of the phone and just the few small apps that I need, I find that really helpful to, like, quickly get in, get out.
I genuinely think about what Donald Trump's phone. Like, don't you just wonder?
I don't think he puts a lot of, like, he's horrible with technology. It's kind of amazing that he, like, knows how to use Twitter as he does, but he, like, famously has people print his emails and stuff for him. So I honestly think someone
hands him a phone, right?
Like, no, he has his own phone that he tweets on. Journalists have seen him do it. It's real. He tweets on his own Android phone. But I think he has, like, basically a stock Android phone. Like, I don't think he's customized anything on there. I don't think he's running any, you know, third-party, like, widgets or anything
like
that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I don't even know. I feel like someone had to install Twitter for him and log in for him and just be like, all right.
If
he gets logged out, or, like, if his phone – does he plug his phone in to charge it? I genuinely wonder, like, if he sees a micro
– I think about stuff like this all the time. I totally agree with you. The thing is, when you think about people in their life, and that's why I made some – and the part that we'll cut out earlier, thinking about, like, walking through, like, what actual things are like for him in certain events, allegedly, it's the implementation and the specifics that, like, go through my mind. It's not the whether or not this happened, but if this does happen, how does it happen? He clearly has virtually no attention span, and especially if it's an attention span for anything that he finds annoying – tiresome or that is not about him. So, like, how is his phone not drained all the time? He must just be flinging it across. Maybe he's got three or four of them. But, like, I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
I just, there was, shit, what was the episode? It was not Trumpcast. Maybe it was some NPR or something that was talking about, like, how the, like, the server, Hillary Clinton's server is just the most boring thing ever. It's just an iMac in their basement. But then talking about how, like, she really wanted to keep her BlackBerry and, like, there was, like, the whole drama. Like, it's crazy. Like, what happens when someone hands Trump a USB-C Android phone and he can't plug it in? It's just, I don't know why these thoughts just pop up, but they do.
Wasn't that like a big part of this? Well, I don't know. You guys tell me. You follow this better than I do. But wasn't that part of the whole email thing? Like, at the heart of it, it was nothing nefarious. It was just that she didn't want to give up her BlackBerry.
That's what the episode seemed to
she
say.
She didn't want two devices. That is correct.
Right, right. I don't know. That's interesting to me. And then I remember, I feel like, hearing a dust up about when Obama was going in, it was going to be hard because he couldn't be seen smoking, even though he was totally going to keep smoking. And that I think there was something about, I want to say, like, people wanting to use iPhones, but not being able to, possibly.
Well, the staff wanted to use, I guess I can talk about this now. A couple of fun stories. So Obama was a BlackBerry guy. He's never been a big iPhone guy, as far as I know. And he really wanted to keep his BlackBerry, and they created RIM, created some sort of special hardened BlackBerry for the president to use. And I don't know whatever became of that. But it was, of course, it was like when you work in the government, you have to use whatever shitty technology they give you. You can't just be like, yeah, I'm going to like use my own computer. That's a big no-no. So the computers are all like IBM, like workstations, you know, in the White House.
I just want to say in passing, I think that is so weird. It would be one thing to go to like FedEx and say, I want to drive a different brand of truck. It's so strange to me, though. That you would tell somebody what kind of computer they have to use.
There are reasons behind it, which I'll get to in a second. I mean, I can explain a little bit of this, but there are reasons behind it having to do with cybersecurity and requisition process and all of this kind of stuff. But it was a big issue. The staff, obviously, you know, if you're a web designer and you're coming in, you have to make the White House website, and it's like you have to use like a PC, basically. Like, it's hard because the tools aren't as good. So people wanted to use Macs and iPhones, and it was accommodated. I think the staff can do that kind of stuff now. But famously, there's a thing called the Paperwork Reduction Act. So the Federal Paperwork Reduction Act says that before the government petitions the people to do anything, like ask them any sort of question or make them fill out any sort of form, they have to create an impact study analyzing the number of hours of lost productivity to the American workers caused by asking that question. So the idea is, this is like a Republican, like, you know, anti-big government measure where it's like, we don't want the IRS like adding a bunch of tax forms. We want to like, you know, analyze the impact of that before it happens to save people's time. You guys with me?
Mm-hmm. It's one of those that makes a lot of sense on the face of it, right?
Correct. So when the White House took over, they decided they wanted to, when the Obama administration took over the White House, they decided they wanted a White House Twitter account. And it became a major legal issue whether they were allowed to tweet or not without a multi-month impact study on each tweet. Because did that constitute asking a question and asking for a response from the American people? And it was decided that they could tweet but not use a question mark. Because if they used a question mark, that constituted asking the American people a question, and that would have been like issuing them paperwork, and an impact study would have to be done.
Now, talk about playing by two sets of rules. My God.
Now, I'm telling you, like, if you, again, this is the thing that only affects our side. We're the ones who care about procedure and following the rules.
That's what I meant. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So, but it is, and that's not even our rule, right? That's like a Republican like rule that's like meant to hamper government functioning and make, you know, small government or whatever. But anyway, all this stuff is just by way of saying, like, it's so fucked. Like, it's so hard for any government person, for Obama or whatever, to have the phone he wants. And God knows what's going to happen with the Trump White House. Like, it's going to be, it's just, and also, like, how small an issue that is in context, but it's sort of representative of, like, the bigger thing of, like, I keep saying this, but, like, so much of what we think of as, like, the lawful continuity of American democracy is just good people deciding to do the right thing. It's like, no one would have, like, the military wouldn't have like staged a coup and like forced Obama out of office. He wouldn't have been impeached if he used the wrong phone. It's that experts around him said, you're putting the nation at risk by using this phone that could be hacked. So, you know, please don't do it. And by convention, and because he has good judgment, Obama was like, okay, I'll do it for the good of the country.
Wow. What about the smoking?
And plus, he never pissed on anyone, probably.
Yeah, total cuck.
A little too much of that piss.
Oh, sorry.